Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRZ, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. This is Jim Beatty sitting in for your regular host, John Johnston. John's just finished up a course in Indiana, that ShivWorks Extreme Close Quarter Concepts course. He'll be calling in. Yeah, he's on the line now. We'll pull him up in just a moment. Tell us what he thought about the class, what he learned, what nifty new injuries he managed to get with part of it. Andy Ulrich is in the hot seat for the evening. Andy, happy birthday, and only a day late on that.
Thank you.
Hey. Andy is 29 again, and we're happy to celebrate.
I was carded just the other day for some adult beverages.
They were looking for what, a senior citizen discount?
No, a certain Shop and Rob that's local to Cincinnati cards everybody, bald people in their 80s. You get carded.
I love it. I'm going to have to stop by just for the, just to feel young again. Folks, the phone lines are wide open for tonight's show. We want to hear from you, and we'll do our best to answer any questions you throw at us. You can reach us at 513-749-5500 or at 800-823-8255 if you're out of the tri-state area. Be sure to check us out at ballisticradio.com and facebook.com/ballisticradio. Later on, we're going to pull in our guest for the evening, Phil Mulliver, spokesman for Ohioans for Concealed Carry. We'll discuss current events, OFCC's ongoing mission in Ohio, and how that impacts you, our faithful listeners. But without further ado, let's get John on the line and see what's going on. Hang on a moment, folks. John, do we have you?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well, sir. How are you doing? Did you survive the class?
I did survive the class. I'm a little worse for wear, but that's kind of part of it. So I'm sure I'll feel great tomorrow.
I'll bet. So tell us, what's this ECQC course anyway? What's the general approach to it?
Well, generally, I've had Craig on the show. Craig Douglas is the gentleman that puts the class on. He was on the show previously. But essentially, the problem is that a lot of gun people concentrate on gun skills, which is fine, but they don't spend enough time learning how to avoid and de-escalate. And then, if that doesn't work, how to handle the 0 to 5 foot problem, as far as a lot of the typical engagement ranges that, if you look at like the Armed Citizen column or, examine some of the statistics, are going to happen within 0 to 5 feet.
It's not out at 25 feet where, convenient pistol range?
No, that'd be nice.
I'm shocked.
That works better. But the entire class is just about how to create space, how to handle yourself if you're in an entangled gunfight. And what I mean by that, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about the Zimmerman thing, but that's actually a really good example of, an entangled gunfight. There's one gun, there's two people fighting over it, and just, I had a helmet on this weekend, and somebody took me down, a double leg takedown, classic MMA, and I smacked my head with a padded helmet on soft grass and like soft stars and Brigadiers and all that. So, it's like a really bigger deal than people give it credit for.
John has a picture of his boo-boo on his forehead on our Facebook page.
Yeah. Check out the Facebook page. There's all sorts of cool information on there. And I actually, I put this up there earlier in the week, but I was going to do a contest for the number of sim rounds that I was struck with. So I will get that counted up and post the winner of that at some point, probably tomorrow if I had to guess, because I'm too tired to think.
You should tell that tomorrow morning just by counting the green welts on your body, right?
Well, some of them didn't necessarily. I've got a line stitched across my lower abdomen. where four of them just impacted. And I'll tell you, the best part about this class was that a lot of classes set you up for failure by creating a situation that you're going to win, mm-hmm. with the thought that, well, that'll build confidence. I guess it does, but it's a false sense of confidence. Sure. Whereas, I mean, I learned more, you know, at one point, a guy tied me up to the point where I could not move and then stuck a gun, you know, into my stomach and shot me 5 times. I mean, and that would have killed me if it had been real rounds. And, you know, it was a wake-up call. Right. It was certainly an enlightening and emotional moment. Mm. I mean, you know, just because that sense of helplessness, you learn a lot from that, and just you start to understand the problem a little bit better. You know, I think everybody has a very positive idea of what they're capable of, and it's really...
We're all Superman, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, and it's, you know, it's the idea I have of myself is based off of the dude from 10 years ago that, yeah, did great, you know, and wasn't as banged up as I am now, didn't have as many injuries, was right. In better shape. And, you know, the stuff I could do 10 years ago, if that's what I'm basing my skills assessment off of, that's wrong. And that's, I think that was the biggest part of this class, is just to see under pressure, in realistic, you know, scenarios that happen all the time, just what's going to happen.
And do you think this is going to give you a more situational awareness, more emphasis on that now? You don't want to get in this situation.
I think so. You know, I try to aware myself as much as possible. I mean, when people talk about situational awareness, you're really talking about visual recognition of a problem. I think the biggest part for me was, you know, learning how to better articulate my decisions, mm-hmm. and also to how to, you know, timing as far, especially when you're entangled, as far as like in-fight weapon access, timing is key there. And what you tend to see, and what I mean, I did it too, is, you know, gun guys go for the gun. You know, they go for the gun when it's a bad time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's made me more of a proponent. I mean, and I'm not going to get in the open carry versus concealed carry debate at all. And I totally am cool with people at open carry, and that's fine. But as a personal decision for me, it reiterated the importance of the person I'm in a conflict with not knowing I have a gun.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause getting shot with your own gun,
that really,
you know,
sucks.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially when you get shot with your own gun in the legs and genitals.
Right.
And it's, oh, you know, great. This is just awesome. So
probably even worse when it's your finger on the trigger.
I did not shoot myself.
That's good.
This is
any
good.
Any of the, really happy with that. I saw it. I mean, there were a couple rounds that got launched that either somebody shot themselves, or what was more interesting to me was how many bystanders got shot.
Oh, wow.
Now, as far as, I mean, and you don't even think about it, but you start floating the gun away from your body and all that, and you're just trying desperately to get rounds onto whatever, you know, and Craig, the instructor, got shot. Paul Sharp, that was on the show a couple weeks ago, he was assistant instructor for this class. He got shot.
Wow.
You know, there were a couple times where it's like, and it's—I know it's the old cliche, but there's a lawyer attached to every round. And
absolutely. And don't feel bad, John, because some New York City police officers actually shot some people just the other day in very much a similar situation. So
yeah, I heard they had a 66% hit rate on 2 civilians,
which is great.
Maybe they should take this class. What do you think?
I think, honestly, if I had to pick one class, and I'm friends with a lot of instructors, and honestly, the more training, the better. But if you could only have one class and you were only going to do one class, this would be it.
Hey, John, we're going to roll to break here and cut you off, man.
Cool.
And we're going to wait till you're back here to hear the rest of this.
Oh, yeah, no, thanks. Enjoy the rest of the show. Hope everyone gets a lot out of it. Thanks, Phil, for coming on for me. So,
great. No problem. Thank you.
Hey, take it easy, guys.
Hey, we'll be right back, guys. We're going to start our conversation with Phil, and we'll be taking your phone calls. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRCB Talk Station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Just a reminder, you can reach us at 513-749-5500 or at 800-823-8255 if you're out of the immediate area. Tonight's guest is Phil Mulliver, spokesman for Ohioans for Concealed Carry. Let's get Phil on the line. Phil, are you there?
Yes. Hi. How are you?
Oh, we're doing great, Phil. Glad that you could spend some time with us this evening. I wonder if you could start with a little background info about yourself. What brings you to where you are? What brought you to OFC?
Well, I've been working with Ohioans for Concealed Carry for a few years out of a general concern for the advancement of Second Amendment rights, particularly in the state of Ohio. I saw that we have some work to do still, have a ways to go, although Ohio is, compared to many other states, is a relatively free state when it comes to firearms rights, as I'm sure you know. But we still have many improvements to make, and that's what I'm trying to help out with.
What's your background, Phil? Where do you come from? You an engineer? You shooting trainer? A police captain?
No, I'm actually an instructor of electronics technology at the college level. I teach at a college in Cleveland, Ohio. I teach electronics, and so my background really isn't in firearms at all, but I share the concern with so many others that we keep these fundamental rights moving forward as they're reflected in everyday law.
What does a typical day, week, month look like with your involvement with OFCC? Is it even close to a part-time job at this point, or is it on the side burner until it's white hot and then you're spending all your time on it?
Well, you know, everybody involved in the leadership at OFCC is almost working a full-time job in addition to their, you know, their regular jobs. None of us are paid. It's a 100% volunteer organization. I think that's very important for people to understand. And the people who steer the organization are essentially working full-time or nearly full-time, trying to move things forward. So, yeah, things do heat up when there's a hot issue. And even in the time since I've been associated with OFCC, which has only been about 3 years or so, oh, we've been through some real roller coaster rides just in that period of time.
And made some good strides, too. Absolutely.
What I'm
you
sorry?
We've made some good strides with OFCC.
Oh, we've made excellent strides. Right. And I think the ups and downs are part of the job and part of the nature of being in the civil rights business. There's always threats, and, people come up with these brilliant ideas, and we have to do our best to keep gun rights moving forward at all times.
One of the things that little discussions that went hot, almost overnight, was the recent happenings in the city of Oberlin. What kind of role did you have? What kind of role did OFCC have there?
Well, I played a role from the sidelines this time. I was involved in writing the press release that's currently up on the OFCC website. Pretty much summarizes the situation in Oberlin. It's getting a lot of attention from the feedback I'm getting over the course of the afternoon. But of course, what's going on in Oberlin is inexcusable on so many levels. Here you have a small municipality thumbing their nose at the Ohio State legislature,
and the Supreme Court,
and the Ohio Supreme Court, thumbing their nose at the enumerated constitutional right of the right to keep and bear arms. It's unbelievable what we're seeing out there. It's a backwards attitude, and we're doing our best in a peaceful, law-abiding way to try to correct that situation.
And and correct me if I'm wrong, but this really came out of like a push, a multi-person member, I should say, members push in OFCC. Their members are going out and going to all these different parks and finding the ones that are still not in compliance with 9.68, which is the section of the Ohio Revised Code which says you have the right to keep and bear arms. Shall not be infringed, but
essentially statewide preemption.
Basically, the state makes your gun laws.
Exactly. I mean, Ohio is very wise. The legislature was quite forward-thinking when they enacted that particular aspect of the Ohio Revised Code. They realized that the state cannot withstand a patchwork of conflicting and inconsistent gun laws. You know, whether they refer to gun rights or the responsibility of gun owners, we can't change the rules every time we cross a city boundary line. It's ridiculous. So knowing that, they enacted a number of years ago a very reasonable, common sense, and innately fair a law that says that the gun laws are going to be uniform throughout the state of Ohio. But you know what? There's been a few towns and a few cities that just haven't been able to live with that. They don't accept the rule of law. They think they're in a private kingdom of their own. And they literally thumb their nose at the state of Ohio. It's something that you have to see it to believe that such a thing can really happen here.
Didn't stop them from continuing to accept state support on all their other, you know, libraries, et cetera, that they need funding from. No,
well,
just guns.
You're right. But what makes it particularly perplexing is that every time a city does this, they get slapped down, either by the Ohio Supreme Court. OFC itself has brought lawsuits against these cities, and in each and every case, without exception, they've had to back down and do the right thing. So wouldn't you think that a small town like Oberlin, Ohio, would have got the message? Why do they want to go through the same failing exercise that these other little towns have gone through? They end up in court. They end up losing money. Case in point, Cleveland Heights. That was one of the more recent cities that tried to pull this. They not only had to immediately change all their ordinances, but they had to pay a handsome fee for their behavior. So why a city would want to repeat this destructive behavior, I really don't know.
City of Campbell also. Isn't that correct?
Campbell's another good example, but I guess each one, you know, becomes a little drunk on power. They become, a little delusional as to what they can actually accomplish, and it's very vexing, you know, to the taxpayer, to the gun rights owner, to the general, you know, citizens of Ohio, to watch this foolishness take place over and over again.
Maybe that's the advantage of when you're drunk on power like that, of being able to play with somebody else's money. And I wonder if the only teeth to 9.68 that they're ever going to understand is if we can attach some kind of a personal responsibility for the officials that continue to push this. You know, right now they're playing with municipal money, tax dollars. If they started to have to play with their own funds, then I bet we'd have compliance pretty quickly.
Well, 100%, and we're working along these lines. We want to attach some meaningful penalties to that section of the Ohio Revised Code. So if a city or a town does not adhere to state law, then there's going to be meaningful punishment to them. And that's when I think this idiocy will finally come to a halt. But we have a ways to go with that. We're working very closely with some legislators in Columbus, and we're hoping that sooner rather than later we'll see changes like this.
We have issues in the city of Cincinnati along the same lines. We have city that will not, that has laws on the books that are not enforceable, but they refuse to remove them from the books. For reasons unknown to us other than they just will not remove them. They don't think they want them to look like they're doing something when they're not.
That could very well be that, you know, these city governments are experts at posturing in so many different ways. This could be one of those ways, but you know, from our point of view, it's a practice that has to stop. It's unethical. It's illegal, and it's a waste of everybody's time and money. So we're let me tell you, and let me tell your listeners that we are working as hard as we can to put a stop to this through giving the law more teeth. And I think that's when we'll see this finally come to an end.
And Phil, what's the goal here of an event like was held in Oberlin? Is the what's the end game? Do we come away with a victory just because there was no violence, there were no stupid reactions, no
they didn't try to arrest law-abiding
exactly.
citizens?
Or do we have a bigger? Is the impact the goal? What when you set out to start something like this, what do you jot on paper and say we want to accomplish at the end of the day?
I think that it was a symbolic gesture more than anything else. The presence of peaceful, law-abiding gun owners being present in Oberlin as they were to make a simple point, it was a symbolic gesture. You know, and I know that the real fight, you know, the real battlefield of this is in the press and in the legislature. That's where it's going to be won or lost. So it's nice that, you know, we staged this, and it's very nice that we were once again, for the 1,000th time, able to show that, you know, we're nice, normal, gentle, law-abiding, happy people. And that's all good, but it, in my opinion, it's a symbolic gesture, and the real battle goes on in Columbus.
I would agree. Phil, if you wouldn't mind holding on to the line, we're going to go to a commercial break, and we'll be right back with you as soon as we can.
Sure.
Thank you very much. When we come back briefly, we'll discuss a few other issues and take more of your phone calls. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Hi, it's Brian Thomas, Monday in the Morning Show. My dad is back, and after a week off and being on vacation, I'm certain he is pent up. Finally, 7:05, tune in to KRC Talk Station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. As always, you can reach us at 513-749-5500 or at 800-823-8255 if you're out of the immediate area. Let's get Phil back on the line. Phil, are you there?
I sure am.
All right. Thanks for hanging on with us. Quick rundown. Any pending legislation, any particular bills that we should focus on? I was noticing that the Senate is in session on Tuesday, as a matter of fact, and then for a couple weeks in a row here. And the House will come back on October the 2nd. Anything, any hot numbers or anything that we should have our folks making phone calls about?
Yes, we want to watch very carefully House Bill 203. There's a number of provisions in that bill that pertain to firearms rights, and we're watching this very carefully. We're going to be testifying in Columbus before the appropriate committees when that occasion arises, and we're watching like a hawk. There's some very interesting aspects of this bill, including extending the Ohio concealed carry license to out-of-state residents. A number of states do this right now. Florida comes immediately to mind, and we'd like to see Ohio do the same thing.
To me, that's an easy sale just from a fund the state, fund the local sheriff campaign. I mean,
well, you know, there may be those benefits. I mean, we're looking at it as we look at every provision in every bill as either enhancing freedom or further limiting it. And this is clearly in the enhancement category, so we like it.
Works
for
me.
Also, there's a very interesting proposal in this bill to eliminate a minimum training requirement for the concealed handgun license in Ohio. And this has generated quite a bit of discussion and even controversy among gun rights advocates. And I'm very curious to know what your listeners think about this one. So we're listening to people very carefully there.
Yeah, folks, call in if you've got feedback on that. I know we did a legislative show here back in August and covered some of the aspects of HB 203. And I'm a personal proponent of the elimination of training requirements. And yet I also have a strong personal sense of responsibility that training is necessary. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that as a dichotomous viewpoint, that I just don't see that government should be in the business of requiring me to do something that in my own logical mind should be able to come up with on my own. Much like shouldn't be required to have a doctorate in speech studies or something before making a fool of myself on the radio.
Well, you know, we're not required to have, we're not required to take swimming lessons either, but it's in everybody's best interest not only to, you know, really know how to swim well, but also to teach your children how to swim. So, you know, you can look at it like that. I'm fascinated by this proposal because I'm an instructor for the concealed carry licensing 12-hour course as it exists now, and mm-hmm. It's interesting. I think if you're really libertarian about it and you take the real constitutional view, they probably ought to go ahead and do away with any mandatory training
yes.
requirement.
I guess in my thinking on it is there's different categories of people. Some people want to get a concealed carry license so they can carry, and they can carry within the state, and they just can go about their business and be able to protect themselves. And then there's some people who travel who would be concerned possibly with this, that they would lose their reciprocity, because a lot of these reciprocity agreements have to have similar training requirements.
That's correct.
So there's nothing saying that you cannot get 12 hours of training, even if these requirements were removed. You could get 50 hours of training if you want and still be able to get that license and still be able to carry. It's just going to be, you don't have to do it.
Hey, we've got a call from Dave in Forest Park. I believe he wants to comment about this. Let's put him on. Dave, what you got for us? I'm doing fine. How's your evening going?
Doing pretty good. Just sitting here listening to this program. It's very interesting. Very, very interesting. I am a United States veteran. I served in during the Vietnam days in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have a concealed carry. And I don't see anything wrong with the class. The class is really interesting. It's not boring at all. Two days, 6 hours a day. You know, you got a lunch break, and you got another little small break in there. And you do fire a weapon, and you can't fail the class. It's really impossible to fail the class. And it's a good class, and it's not boring at all.
I think some of the instructors do them in one day, 12 hours straight, and I think that kind of stretches some people.
Right, yeah. You can do it two ways, either 12 hours or the 2 days, 6 hours a day. I chose to do 2 days, 6 hours a day.
Well, Dave, if you had to vote one way or the other, would you vote for a requirement for training, or would you get rid of the requirement and still just push people to do it out of their in their own self-interest?
Well, what do you mean by training now? Now, the class is not really what you call training. It's just a class to make you familiar and knowledgeable about how weapons came into existence, the different type of weapons, the power of a weapon. It's not so much training. when you fire your weapon, you're told how to hold it, mm-hmm. you know, like that. But it's not what you call a training session.
You know, those are wise words, Dave. It's kind of like anything else that's required by law.
Getting familiar with the weapon.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's an informational class.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And various aspects of self-defense
right.
and Ohio's requirements right. to meet
they do,
that.
They do ask you now, have you ever fired a weapon? They prefer to have people who have fired a weapon so they know what, you know, the kickback is on a weapon, you know, just to be a little bit familiar. They do ask you that question.
Sure.
Yeah.
But Dave, if we were going to do away with the current 12-hour class, what were the legal requirement today, what would be your take on that? Would you say that's a good thing to do away with, or would you say keep it?
I would say keep it because it's interesting. It really is. I mean, it's an interesting class. I did not get bored. I didn't fall asleep. I had to be there, I think, what time was that? 7 o'clock in the morning, I believe it was. Yeah. And you can't fall asleep because it's really interesting. It's an interesting class.
I think you had a good instructor, Dave.
Yeah. You're not talking about stand your ground right now, are you?
Oh, no.
Okay. Concealed carry, yeah. There is a lot of states now that do honor concealed carry. Georgia is one that does not. So, in other words, I went on a vacation here last month. Okay, I went through the state of Kentucky and Tennessee. They do honor your concealed carry. Georgia does not. The only thing is, though, when you get pulled over, even here in the state of Ohio, the first thing you tell the police officer, if you got a concealed carry on you or in the car, the first thing you make him aware that you do have a license and that you do have a concealed weapon. They teach you that. Yeah, that's the first thing you tell the officer. And the second thing.
You know, there's a very interesting point to be made here also. And Ohio is only one of four states in the entire country that require this police notification during a law enforcement encounter. We're in the very tiny minority of states that require such a thing, and we are very anxious to see that procedure go away.
And Ohio has a very funny way. They say promptly. Now, what is prompt to you, Phil, and what is prompt to
when the officer comes
Jim?
Up to your car, the first thing you tell him, officer, okay. I am a licensed concealed carry. Right. I do have a concealed weapon, you know, on me or in the car. At that point, if he wants to see the weapon, you are not to show it to him.
Right.
If he wants to see it, he has to go and get it, or you tell him where it's at, and then he'll do it, because you don't want to be construed as getting a weapon, right. And then he shoots you or something, see? So
okay.
They do teach you that in the class.
Right. Now, Dave, you tell me, what is the amount of seconds that you have to say this? 10 seconds, 50 seconds, a minute. What would you say is prompt?
The first thing to come out your mouth.
Okay, but what is that? And that's totally upon the officer's discretion to say it was not prompt enough. So you could say it in 1 second, and if the officer didn't like that, he could say it wasn't prompt enough. We've actually had people who have been prosecuted for waiting 50 seconds.
Okay.
They did not successfully get prosecuted. But we had somebody who informed, but waited 50 seconds, and they prosecuted him for it.
Okay.
Hey, Dave, we're gonna move on to the next call.
All right,
we appreciate you calling in.
Okay, y'all
have
a good evening now.
You
take care. Bye-bye.
We've got George and Madeira that I'd like to George, we're going to have you hang on for a second. We're about 10 seconds away from break here, folks, and we'll come right back. We'll discuss a few other issues, and we'll continue taking your phone calls. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Tomorrow at 9:06 on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. You can reach us tonight at 513-749-5500 or at 800-823-8255 if you're out of the immediate area. We'll try to fit your questions and comments in when we can. We've got Phil Mulver from OFCC hanging on the line. Let's get Phil back on. Phil, thanks for hanging in there.
No problem. I'm happy to be here.
Hey, that was some interesting feedback from Dave. I didn't think we'd hear right off the top somebody in favor of hanging on to the class. But, Dave, thank you so much for giving us a buzz. We've got George from Madeira on the line, and I think he's got a comment on the same section. So let's get him on the line. And, Phil, maybe you can take this one away if he gives you a chance to.
Okay.
George, you're on the line.
Yes, am, and thank you guys for picking up the torch here on the subject after the program went off the air, the last group of people who were on.
But, not a problem. We love being here.
I support the House Bill 203. I think that's a good thing. It's worked for Florida. It could work for us. I just want to make a couple of statements here. When an officer has reasonable suspicion or probable cause, and they'll pull you over in your vehicle, if the vehicle is registered to you, they already know that you have a concealed carry because
exactly.
It comes up in the top border, a little red flash and flag. So they're already notified, number one, and that's why it behooves you to keep your hands on the wheel and come up, and as soon as you're able to articulate the fact that you have a concealed carry permit and et cetera, where your weapon is. The reason why I really called, it seems, is the training requirement.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine that somebody who has never handled a firearm at all in their life would go get a concealed carry permit and not be required to get familiarization and training with the firearm. I shoot IDPA, and I've been around handguns. I shoot at least twice a month. That is pistol, and then I do or handgun, and that type of thing. And when I'm around some people who have concealed carry that only took the familiarization or the legally required class, some of those people I'm not comfortable being around when they handle their firearm. They just don't have, in my estimation, they don't. Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, we're still.
Oh, yeah, I hear. They don't have enough real training. And at a minimum, I believe at their own volition, they should probably go get an advanced concealed carry class, which would be the next step up from the basic requirements in that. But with the 12-hour class and the 2 hours you get shooting the handgun and everything, they don't remember the four cardinal rules, and they think they're all qualified, and they think they can draw from concealment and defend themselves. And quite frankly, in my experience and a lot of people in law enforcement that I work with, they don't think they're qualified either. So I can't imagine.
If I could throw something in here. Hi,
sure,
George.
Sure.
This is Phil.
Sure, Phil. Go ahead.
We got to look at what happens in states, for example, that have never had a training requirement. You could consider Vermont. You can consider Alaska. Let's look at Vermont for a second. There's no training requirement, and there is no greater percentage of mishaps or accidents or mishandling or catastrophes or bad outcomes in Vermont, than there are anywhere else. In fact, there's less. So it's very tempting to say, and I'm a firearms instructor, and it's very tempting for me to say that, we have to be nannies, and we have to insist that everybody be put through a certain a number of hours of training or a certain program or a certain requirement. But if you look at, if you very dispassionately look at history and look at the facts, there's nothing to really indicate that anything terrible is going to happen if you let people acquire their own training. It's just there's no scientific or objective reason for us to believe that we'd be headed in the wrong direction by doing that. So
Well,
you got to really look at that, George, and you got to consider, you know, what has already happened elsewhere.
Let me just interject. You talk scientific. A sampling of 1/50th of the country, especially Vermont, where I consider the only thing good that comes out of there is their syrup. you cannot say that that is a scientific result that you can depend on when you just refer to one particular state in the nation.
Well, George, we've got Vermont, we've got Alaska, and we've got Arizona.
Well, yes, okay, but then we might as well not have to test for driving an automobile. You know, let's just go ahead, get our driver's license and everything, let our dad teach us how to drive the car, and go out, and quite frankly, I'm 78 years old. When I was 5 or 6 years old, there were people doing that.
That was the law,
but you have to understand that.
Well, yeah, but why should it be a law
more than the
required training to carry a dangerous weapon? And we feed into the people who do not want concealed carry. That just gives them leverage to the general population that here is a bunch of people who are walking around in your neighborhood or in your department store or who have never had any training, and they carry this deadly weapon.
And George, that's perfectly legal in the state of Ohio right now. As long as you don't conceal that handgun,
it's all about the concealing.
Anyone can walk out there, strap on a firearm, and carry it.
And
I'm going to move on to the next caller, but thank you so much for calling in.
And we have to look at concealed carry. Concealed carry regulation is in the history of the United States is relatively a new concept in the history of guns in the United States of America. This wonderful country. We didn't regulate this until about the 1930s or so. Would you say that's correct, Phil?
Actually, there were concealed carry laws on the books in the mid and later 1800s. They became much more common and more prevalent as time went on, but they actually go back quite a ways.
We've got, of course, the real modern push for gun control as an outcropping of the civil rights movement in the late 50s and 60s, and you know the capstone of the Gun Control Act of 68, following on the heels of some major assassinations, making that piece of garbage possible. But we've been in a mode where we've been trying to seize back. With the help of key organizations, seize back little pieces of freedom that should have never been ceded away in the first place. Phil, I'm sure you know my personal feeling on this is that state requirements are among the most insidious forms of freedom encroaching garbage that exists today. And my personal requirements are much higher.
I happen to agree with you, and I think I speak for the overwhelming majority of OFCC members as well. We have way too many laws, whether they're firearms laws or stop sign laws or whatever you want to identify. We are way, way overburdened with laws and regulations in this country.
Kind of sounds like something we wrote a document about taxes eating out sustenance and laws that were untenable and unfollowable. I thought we did something about that.
Yeah, well, we've tried, and we'll keep on trying, I guess.
Speaking of keeping on trying, Phil, we've got about a minute or so left here. What can our listeners do to get into this battle for restoration and preservation of our rights? How do they find their way to the trenches?
Well, one of the things they want to do is be sure to follow the news on the OFCC website, Ohioans for Concealed Carry, at ohioccw.org. .org.
Got it.
OhioCCW.org. They're going to get all the latest news and commentary on everything that's happening. And they also want to follow HB 203. That's Ohio House Bill 203. One of the previous callers expressed their unconditional support for that bill, but the fact is, this is a mixed bill. There's aspects in the bill that are very pro firearm rights, and there's some negative things in the bill too. So before you go out and, you know, start waving the flag for HB 203, you want to take a very, very careful look. And look at the pieces that look good and look at the pieces that don't. And
I would agree.
We're going to work together to try to get the good ones through and leave the bad behind.
Excellent. Thanks, Phil. We're running out of time here. I really appreciate you being here. Next Sunday, John Johnston will be discussing the durability of firearms coatings and the ins and outs of 1911s with Bill Reel from Blackfire Engineering. Be sure to tune in and join in at 7 p.m. Check out our website at ballisticradio.com and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. As always, thanks for listening and have a safe and productive week.